Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Chris Roebling, liberal Eric Zorn, and Anthony Anderson. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the new Museum of Broadcast Communications on State Street, that great street in Chicago. Nice to have you with us. 1-800-723-8289 is the toll-free number. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to watch this broadcast or listen to this broadcast because you miss it, it is available on the web at beyondthebeltway.com. We keep them archived for many, many years. In fact, a couple of our guests, you could go in and back and watch yourself about 12, 15 years ago, see how smart you were with your political prognostications, which is fun to do from time to time. Tonight, we're obviously talking politics. We've got a great panel with you this evening. And I would like to begin by talking about, obviously, the dominant story of the campaign this past week, and that is Bain. It's the issue that will not go away for Mitt Romney. He has touted his leadership of Bain as one of the reasons why he would be a great president and a good steward of the national economy. And yet his record there, whether he was actually in charge of some of the decisions or whether they were decisions that were made long after he left the control of the company, certainly has dominated the news of this past week. So, Eric Zorn, let me talk with you, veteran columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Isn't all fair in love and politics? And so whatever the president dishes out there, Romney's got to be able to deal with it.
Well, he certainly tried to deal with it, didn't he? He did, what is it, four or five network appearances right in a row on Friday night. And this is the same.
Did he do well?
This is the same guy who's been ducking every other network but Fox for the entire campaign season. And now suddenly he's willing to go and do all these interviews. Well, he has his line, his talking point line. He says over and over again that he left Bain in 1999. And a lot of the questions that the Obama campaign are raising have to do with the things that Bain Capital did after 1999. And the answer to that, which is part of the Boston Globe's story on Thursday, which is that, yeah, he may have left. He said later that he was on a leave of absence, but his name is all over the corporate documents from Bain Capital. He was the president, the CEO, the sole stockholder, and presumably when he was going back to he was running the Olympics out in Salt Lake City. Presumably when he was going back to Boston, he admitted to going to board meetings for companies that Bain controlled. So he was involved in Bain. Now, you know, the question is, of course, there's two questions. I'm sure we'll get to both of them. One is, so what? And I guess both of them are so what. But
Chris Roebling is our card-carrying conservative tonight. What's your reaction to the way in which the Romney campaign is handling this issue thus far?
Concern. Very deep concern. I don't think that the Romney campaign is anywhere close to where it needs to be relative to this kind of campaigning from David Axelrod. And I think that's one element of the story this week. The other element of the story this week, which is not, I think, generally being discussed, but this is a perfect place to bring it up because we're insiders and we look at this stuff. I think the Obama campaign right now, and I say this without any sort of partisanship, I'm just sort of looking at this as an analyst, is now choosing its losses.
And that's not good.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to lose. I'm not predicting he's going to lose. I think he's a very strong contender. But this Bain Capital theme has been focus group tested with blue-collar ethnic Catholics and union households, and it does very well. And so it's helping Obama recoup some of the loss of the Catholic vote that he experienced with the so-called war on women, where he picked a fight with the Catholic Church. So he's got different constituencies. Mm-hmm. From the beginning, I've said everything we're going to see is to divide and then to terrorize, and then to mobilize. That's all they're doing.
Slice here, a slice
exactly.
There. Slice it up.
Run it up. It's the Harold Washington Coalition writ large, and right now they're having to choose their losses, and that's why they're pushing Bain.
Anthony Edison also joins us. Your reaction, Anthony. You're active in the Republican Party. For those listening around the country on radio, you're an African-American Republican.
Absolutely.
There's not a lot of them.
Absolutely. There's not a lot of us. You can probably fit us all in the phone booth, as a matter of fact. But the fact of the matter is...
Well, the phone booth would have to be pretty big, though, for you, Anthony.
I, too, share some of the concerns with this Bain Capital. I mean, either you were the CEO, COO in 1999 or 2002, or you're not. I mean, Mitt Romney can be compared to, I would say, even Jesse Jackson Jr. in terms of getting information out there. There's just too much uncertainty. Either you were the COO or the chief executive officer, you were part of Bain Capital, or you were not. And at what year were you there, or what year were you not? Now, insofar as...
It should be a simple thing.
It sounds simple on its face. At least all we have to do is, like anybody else, go to the SEC reports, and we'll see exactly what happened. Now, either you were lying on the SEC reports, or you're being dishonest with the American people. Well, which one is it?
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to come to Romney's defense on this and say that the documents I think you need to look at are some of the Bain Capital board meeting minutes.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
I mean, his name is on these SEC filings. Nobody's disputing that. And the answer to that question seems to be, well, this was pro forma. He left quickly to take over the Olympics, so this was like a lot of paperwork, and we were putting his name on it. I'm not sure that I buy that, but...
Well, four-year stint, though?
But, well, yeah. I mean, the question is it possible that he was... on a leave of absence, which I think kind of makes sense. So the Olympic job was not easy, but was he, you know, were they running key decisions past him, such as the decisions about the major companies to get, you know, an hour phone calls here and there?
If I may, the Obama administration or the Obama campaign, and really they're the same, but if the Obama thing, whatever it is,
Team Obama.
If Team Obama had come out with a shred of evidence that supported their assertion that he was actually involved in running these companies or in running the deals, let alone getting down to the nth level of specificity, was he running any decisions about outsourcing? $28 billion has been wasted by the Team Obama Department of Energy, and a lot of the money that has gone out into private hands has then been spent overseas, whether it's in Finland or China or Mexico. And so I really think that the fact we're discussing this goes back to Anthony's point. Romney was not ready to deal with it. Winning a Republican primary is like playing, you know, super college baseball.
But Newt brought this up three months ago.
He's playing against the New York Yankees, and they don't play by the rules. Yes, Newt brought it up 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago, and that's another reason that Romney should have been able to squelch it immediately.
Well, not only did Newt bring it up, Teddy Kennedy brought it up in 1994.
I mean, not the 1990. You know,
the whole Bain Capital issue of outsourcing and equity, all those things, job losses, all things were done well. The point to me is, I don't see why Romney doesn't just own it. Say, look, it doesn't matter. I mean, basically, because what Bain was doing in 1999, 2002 is fundamentally like what they were doing before 1999. It wasn't like the company took a big turn to one thing to another. And the Washington Post did a pretty good story about Bain's activities all along. And the question then becomes, okay, and you're raising a good point. What about outsourcing? And maybe this gets into the Ralph Lauren Olympic uniform question.
Absolutely.
Let's agree. We can all sit around this table and agree. American industry has been outsourcing for a long time now. It's been going on for a long time. How do we feel about it?
By the way, just on that particular subject, and I want to get everybody's reaction to it because we're about to go to a break. But again, did you see Ed Gillespie? I think Ed Gillespie was on Meet the Press.
Oh, he was
today.
Terrible.
He was terrible.
Awful.
And on the issue of the uniforms, he punted. He didn't have an answer
issue.
I want to get your reaction and everyone's reaction to it. And again, those listening from coast to coast and border to border, what would your decision be about the Olympic uniforms? And if you saw Ed Gillespie, spokesman for Mitt Romney today, dance and prance and fumble the response to that, I want to get your reaction. Give us a call. Back shortly. From Hammond, Indiana to Cooksville, Tennessee, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight, 1-800-723-8289. Again, we were sort of in agreement that today when Ed Gillespie was a key cog in the Romney campaign, was on Meet the Press and was asked about the issue of the uniforms, He seemed like he couldn't imagine that the question was going to be asked. He didn't know what Romney had said about it. I mean,
he had no 3x5 card.
No.
That one had been left out of the stack.
This should have been so instinctive.
Fire breathing. I want to say this. You have the Etch-a-Sketch comment by Eric Fernstrom. Then you have Eric Fernstrom with the I don't really know if it's a penalty or tax comment, and I got a backstory on that one. Then you've got this Gillespie today, and you've got Romney, I think, not very well prepared to talk to your former colleague Jan Crawford on national news, and then three other big national broadcast interviews. This all points up that the Romney campaign does not have a solid communications program, and it doesn't have the ability to formulate or execute the delivery of a key message. And if this doesn't get changed now, Barack Obama will be reelected. Only if it is changed now can these guys stay in the race. But Barack Obama, David Axelrod, Plouffe, and the whole team Obama, they're going to run circles around these guys.
Well, it isn't just Gillespie. I mean, it's the candidate himself. I mean, in a political campaign, you may call it demagoguery, whatever you will call it. But I don't know how you don't pounce on the issue of the uniforms being made in China, the Olympic uniforms.
Well, that was a perfect opportunity for the organization Mitt Romney has in place to solidify their efforts to, you know, gain some support in America. I mean, how can you not know uniforms were made in China that was for the United States teams in the Olympics? How can you not know that? And then how can you not come up with some feasible explanation as to why it was in the first place? He should always – Mitt Romney is playing on his toes in this game here, and it's showing. It's obvious.
Mitt Romney would have had a really hard time making an issue out of this for a couple of reasons. One, it's not clear to me that – the U.S. Olympic Committee is private. They're not running these decisions by the White House. Number two, he probably didn't want to raise the outsourcing issue, which is difficult for him to answer. And you know, you talked about how Gillespie didn't have
– But he wants to go to the Olympics to remind everybody that he was in charge of the Olympics.
Exactly. Right. And you know what may be true? And
he's trapped.
With the Salt Lake City Olympic uniforms, where were they made? I mean, someone's probably got
there
an old uniform around that's probably got a tag in it. And so it may just be a toxic issue for that
Wouldn't
reason
that
for
be
Romney.
A story?
But, you know, I'll bet, you know, in fairness to Romney, I'll bet he didn't sign off on where the darn uniforms were made. I mean, he was
Romney came in at the back end of that, and he was in there for the host committee. He wasn't in there for the Olympic team.
Okay.
Big difference. He was in there for the city of Salt Lake City and the transit system and all of the infrastructure.
Yes, I would give him a pass on that, but I do think that that raising the outsourcing issue from his campaign would have been unwise.
But even the wisdom of the U.S. Olympic Committee to have the uniforms of the country made in China?
The U.S. Olympic
there's
Committee.
There's absolutely no wisdom in that decision whatsoever.
Right. No.
Right.
None whatsoever.
This isn't outside the Beltway sports. I want to talk to you about the fact that this campaign is so darn close, and the fact that it is darn close because unemployment in the black community is 14%. Unemployment in the Latino community is over 10%. We've got 41 months of unemployment nationally over 8%. And that makes a close race. And that's why David Axelrod says it's time to change the subject. And if we here sitting in Chicago understand this, I don't understand why the so-called smart people in Boston aren't tuned in. And I think a reason is because they're all nice Northeastern Republicans. And I used to work in the Northeast as a Republican, and I know how nice they are. They don't know anything.
They don't know how to get nasty.
They don't know anything about Chicago.
They got to come to Chicago.
They don't know.
Absolutely right. They're trying to bring a knife to a gunfight, and it's not working at all, and it's obvious.
I'm not so sure.
Absolutely, it is true. I mean, what part don't you see? Like he just said, unemployment in the black community is at 14%. In the Hispanic community, it's 15%. If you look at the unemployment amongst young black males between 19 and 34, you see unemployment goes up 39.4%. Barack Obama has been abysmal in the black community, yet still blacks will continue to support this guy at a rate of 95% to 5%. I mean, what part do you need?
Well,
Mitt Romney should come out swinging. He's always on the defense. Mitt Romney needs to come out on the offense and offense swinging.
Let me run this quote by you. Since I came in and the jobs, they've been falling off a cliff. I came in and they've been falling for 11 months. We turned it around. We're coming back. That's progress. If you're going to suggest to me that somehow the day I got elected, somehow jobs should immediately turn around, that would be silly. It takes a while to get things turned around. We were in a recession. We were losing jobs every month. We were in free fall. Now we're adding jobs. The speed of the recovery is out of our control.
It is George Bush. 2001.
It's Mitt Romney, 2006.
Okay, Mitt Romney. Here is what I want to tell you. Barack Obama changed that playing field when he told us before voting on the stimulus plan that if you pass this plan, then we will have unemployment below 8%.
Shovel-ready product.
And we're going to do the shovel. And now I think that his credibility has been shot.
Absolutely.
But what is happening when Mitt Romney is responding to Barack Obama and Barack Obama is dancing out on the stage saying, we're not issuing any apologies from this campaign, then his credibility inevitably goes back up. So the Obama campaign is succeeding in dominating the conversation.
They certainly are. They certainly in the last week, and it isn't the only week of the campaign where they have put Romney on the defensive. And, you know, whether it's Bain or whether it's outsourcing, this the magic
tax
word
returns,
this week.
Tax returns are going to feed outsourced. Right out of this Bain thing. Lack of transparency.
We'll see those tax returns when we see the transcript from Occidental College for Barack Obama's freshman and sophomore year.
Those are completely
irrelevant.
You're
talking about transparency. Transparency. When did transparency start? When Romney became the nominee for president?
Well, because every presidential nominee going way back has released years and years of tax returns.
But he hasn't even been transparent.
About his transcript in college?
Okay, let's get away from the transcripts. What about
Tony Resco?
Resco, that's one thing.
How did he get the house down there on the south side?
What about that transparency with Eric Holder and his whole guns for this gun running scheme?
Exactly.
What is the transparency at? But transparency.
Let's take this transparency thing to another level. We're listening to a very feeble attempt to change the subject from the tax returns. Mitt Romney's dad put out a dozen years and said only 1 or 2 years. That was then. This is now right. When John McCain wanted to vet Mitt Romney for vice president, he gave him his tax returns back to 1984. When someone applies to be a position in the cabinet, the Congress demands more than 2 years of tax returns. This is complete.
It's
playing into the narrative of Romney as
it is playing into the narrative. And then when you add to that the Swiss bank account, there's nothing wrong with the Swiss bank account, but you know what? It has a connotation.
Right.
It's better to have a Swiss bank account than a bank account with holes, trust
me. But there are but to the casual observers who will decide this election, the people that don't listen to this show, when you hear the word Swiss bank account,
most people probably don't even know what a Swiss bank account means.
But don't they feel better?
No, I disagree.
Don't they feel better when they hear the day-to-day observers of the political scheme, but the average person.
I think speaking for the average person.
Yes.
I think that when they hear that, I think they think, well, they think shenanigans
here is what it is,
a negative connotation.
If I may.
You may.
I think that,
Chris Roebling.
Thank you. I think that the whole thing about the tax returns is itself a diversion.
Absolutely.
I think everybody understands that Mitt Romney has been fabulously successful, $225 million, whatever it is. And I think everybody understands when you're that wealthy, you've got a lot of tax headaches because all of us who make one zillionth of that have tax headaches at our level. So I don't think that that's a burning issue. The burning issue is who's going to grow this economy and get America back to work in the African-American community, in the Latino community, across, from Florida to Seattle. And Barack Obama's had his 4-year try. People who think like I do think that he's sort of struck out. OK, there are other people who think, no, he's really going to get the next pitch and hit it out for home. Fair enough. But they're keeping the conversation. David understands that's not a winner. David Axelrod, friend of this program, knows that that's a loser. And so they're coming up with all of these other things. And then Romney is following along by not, really a frontal assault on Obama on the issue of job creation and what's the plan for the future to get America working.
60,000 to 80,000 jobs per month, that's not job creation whatsoever.
Well,
Eric.
Part of the problem is that Romney does not have a crisp job creation program. Romney's talking about Romney's tax cuts are going to benefit. He's going to confer more benefit on the wealthy. It's going to his spending plan is going to drive up the deficit. And so you've got this situation where people are saying, basically, Romney wants to turn it into a referendum on Obama. As Chris is saying, the economic results have not been nearly as good as what Obama wanted, arguably.
Nearly.
Even
But
he hasn't been able to do that thus far because, as Chris has made umpteen times in our first half hour, this campaign is being They've been outmanaged. They've been outcoached.
Totally right. outmanaged. Right. Totally outmanaged.
And of course, Obama wants to make it into a choice. He can say, "Do you want to go back to this guy who talks a lot like George Bush, but is even weirder than George Bush? I mean, and this battery operated
weird
guy."
In what sense? In what sense?
Romney?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Just this weekend,
anyway. I heard Obama say something about this whole new approach in terms of the economy being he wants to have a top, bottom down, middle out approach towards the economy. What does he mean when he say that?
You got me.
That's what he said. He said instead of trickling down economics, he wants to have this bottom up, middle out term of economy.
I can't translate that, but I can tell you that obviously
that's when poor people invest their money.
Right. Let me tell you.
By buying lottery tickets.
I have said consistently on this program. I stand by what I have said. This will be the most vicious campaign in history. This will be the most vicious. And we've only begun to see the viciousness of the attacks on Mitt Romney. Now, those of us who have hung around Chicago know these people. We understand what this is all about. My problem is the people who are at the highest levels of the Romney organization are as deer in the headlights as Ed Gillespie was this morning on the TV show.
We've got to pause. Are totally out of our league.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border now in our 32nd year. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. From Baton Rouge, Louisiana to St. Charles, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Joining us around the table this evening, Eric Zorn is here. He is a longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and not only has he been writing for that paper for many, many years, he was one of the first journalists in the United States really to develop a following on the Internet with his blogs and as sort of legendary in pushing the envelope of American journalism. Also joining us this evening is Chris Roebling. Chris Roebling is a longtime political operative in the state of Illinois. Once upon a time, he was the executive director of the Cook County Republican Party. He's now with Jane C. Thompson and Associates, a public affairs firm. And also joining us this evening is Anthony Anderson. He is with the Republican Precinct Project, and he is also working with the Juvenile Justice Department in the state of Illinois, where you, in 50 words or less, what do you do in the Juvenile Justice Department?
I'm a Correctional Food Service Supervisor. I work in the Dietary Department to ensure that the inmates are fed properly for whatever reason. And that's what I do. I've been doing that for the last 20 years.
Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast before we take calls that you are an African-American. You're a Republican.
Yes.
You're a very strong, outspoken Republican, as we certainly have seen in the last couple of segments on this broadcast. Why are you a Republican?
I think I'm a Republican. Well, I know I'm a Republican for the most part because I believe in the condition of limited government. A government big enough to give you everything is a government big enough to take everything from you. So I'm from that standpoint where I want government out of my life at every point of the way.
Every 4 years, there is a story, a day or two story, about how the Republican candidate for president goes and addresses the NAACP. It happened this past week with Mitt Romney. What was your reaction to the reaction he received at the convention?
My reaction to what happened there was it was par for the course. I knew that was going to happen. I mean, I knew Mitt Romney wasn't going to go in there and pander to the NAACP. What Mitt Romney did go and do was pretty much insult the participants of that organization. How is it that you can go into that organization with absolutely no ties to the black community and say we're going to take away a program which over the last 2 years or so has given blacks, for the most part, at least 7 million, we're counting up to 7 million right now, the ability to gain some health care in this country through the Affordable Care Act, which Obama has put into play. And it's like that's an insult. I mean, out of all things that you could say, there are some things that I've been talking with several friends of mine. One in particular was Kathy Santos, and she was talking about, well, why didn't Mitt Romney go there and talk about education? If he wanted to form, that was a perfect way to segue into something sort of for educational purposes. If you're going into a community or if you're going into an organization such as the NAACP, the Urban League, or something like that, my first reaction would be go there and look at what they're doing. Marry what I'm doing and what they're doing and see where it is that we can come to an agreement. What we can't come to agreement on, we can talk about. What we can't come to agreement on, we won't talk about at all.
Chris Roebling, is it a waste of time for a Republican presidential candidate to address the NAACP?
Oh, absolutely not. It's a very important, it's a venerable national organization, which unfortunately now operates like an arm of the Democratic National Committee.
To me personally, it's all it is an extension of the Democratic National Committee.
Right, right. I mean, but I mean, there is a venerable history, and it is a national organization. It does have chapters all over, and I think that as president, you ought to reach out to that, and you ought to. I take Anthony's point very seriously. I think there is a lot of support in the African American community for educational choice. There's a lot of faith in parents. And there's a lot of ability of parents to choose what's best for their kids. And this would have been a perfect time for Mitt Romney to start building out that little sod of common ground.
But the fact of the matter, too, is, Chris, is this. The fact of the matter is most blacks don't even identify themselves as card-carrying members of the NAACP or the Urban League. To go to those organizations, not saying that it wouldn't help him one iota to go to those organizations. They're not connected to the people that vote.
Does it, however, from a political standpoint, again, when I saw and heard Mitt Romney being booed. He was booed at that convention. Here's my question. When a candidate like Mitt Romney is booed by black people at the NAACP, does that help him with white voters?
I'll bet his handlers were backstage saying Yahtzee. I think that's part of the plan. I think the plan wanted to get in there and he wanted to. First of all, I take Chris's point. It shows some courage to go into an organization where what percentage of the vote?
What's with courage going into a black organization? You're a white candidate.
No.
Listen, Chris, what planet are you living on?
He's Eric.
The president of the United States.
I'm Chris.
I'm sorry, Eric. The president of the United States himself said he's not going into that NAACP. He sent the vice president. Why do you think the president of the United States sent the vice president to the NAACP?
Let me answer that question in a second. Let me finish what I was saying, though, about going. It takes the same kind of courage for him to go there because the African-American vote went like 94-95% for Obama. So it's like he's going there. He knows he's not going to get a particularly friendly reception. It would be similar to the courage that, say, it would take for Obama to go speak to the National Rifle Association. Not that they would ever invite him. In my mind,
there's absolutely no courage there. I mean, courage to me would be Mitt Romney going to, let's say, Iowa or Illinois and saying to the soybean producers,
Anthony,
we're going to take away your subsidies.
What about my point? What about my point, which Eric, I think, just agreed with? And that is the sound of that moment for me is you've got black people booing Mitt Romney. Does that help Mitt Romney in some sectors of the country?
It helps in terms of fundraising for his constituency. Yes, that helps.
How about in
do you realize also, in
union households?
Union households, probably to some extent, I would say earlier today, the head of the Washington, D.C. NAACP said this. He said that Romney bussed in black conservatives. They bussed in black conservatives to this event down in Texas. Now, why would you do that? The only reason why he did that was so he can have some cheerleaders. Now, you knew what you were doing in the first place. He didn't go down there trying to connect with black people in the first place. It was a political stunt, as Eric Zorn stated earlier. It was a political stunt. The handlers backstage were saying, thank you very much. This just raised our numbers up.
But there's one other thing. Can I just add one other thing? I think he was also speaking to the moderate independent voters in the middle of the electorate, not the people who are like, oh, good, black people are booing him. That must make him all right. I mean, there may be some people like that, probably are. But I think he's also speaking to the independent moderate voters, the people who are still on the fence on this, who want to be assured that he does feel like he can connect with black people. So we're switching gears, but
we're going to stay in the same ballpark. But we're switching gears. The big rumor of the week, Condoleezza Rice, according to Drudge, way up, moving up on the Veep stakes.
Right.
Do you believe that?
Not really. No, I didn't really believe that.
Does anybody believe that?
There's no truth to the story. I mean, outside of her being a woman in black, what does she bring to the table?
No.
What does she bring to the table? When you bring a piece to an organization,
I disagree with that.
She's neutral in this position.
Anthony, what does she bring to the table?
I think that
you got to let other people speak.
This started with Mrs. Romney. And this may have been a Romney campaign sort of strategy or something approaching one to get the conversation about women and the vice presidency going. So Mrs. Romney makes her statement, and then a few days later, people start leaking. In this situation, it is axiomatic that the people who know what is going on are not saying anything, and the people who are talking don't know what's going on. with respect to Condoleezza Rice. She's been univocal throughout. She's not interested. She doesn't want to take it. She got a big boost out of the Park City little Romney rally, the mini Romney thing that they had out there for major donors. She actually brings a lot of gravitas for a governor who has never had personal involvement in foreign affairs to take a secretary of state and to elevate. You know, Thomas Jefferson was secretary of state before he was president. To be secretary of state is to be
She's
facially
never ran
qualified
for any political office.
To be
right.
Had Thomas Jefferson.
Okay,
before.
Well, that was then. This is now. So go ahead.
So I think
200 years later,
she has to be on any
okay.
list.
All right, let's
she has
let,
to be on
let
any
Eric,
list.
Let's no. let Eric
well,
talk about.
Well, she's pro-choice.
She absolutely
end of conversation.
Pro-choice.
It would create a riot in Tampa and the convention. I mean, no way.
Well, that's my point exactly. What does she bring to the table?
To me?
What does Condoleezza bring to
nothing.
The table? Absolutely nothing. Besides the fact that she's a black woman.
Absolutely nothing.
Next.
And any person who, when she was the national security advisor in the wake of 9/11, who said that it was incredible, she couldn't imagine planes flying into the World Trade Center, then she isn't imaginative enough to be the president of the United States or a heartbeat away. Hector in St. Charles, Illinois on WLS 89. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the outsourcing and unemployment, and I'd also like to make a comment on the uniforms. If you want less of something, you make it as complicated as possible. Hiring people in the United States, all the withholding, federal, state, FICA, Medicare, Medicaid, workers' comp, unemployment insurance, Obamacare pretty soon, lawsuits. I mean, you know, hiring people here in this country is crazy. And it's just very hard to do, and it's very expensive. And as long as it's that way, I think we're going to have high unemployment. And I'd like to make a comment on the uniforms. They look like something the Hitler Youth should wear.
Yeah.
They look terrible.
They were.
So that's all my compliments. You guys
Lawrence,
have a nice night.
I haven't seen them yet. Are they bad looking?
No, they're not attractive.
Huh.
I don't think they're attractive.
No.
Anyway, thank you for your point. Bill in Hammond, Indiana, listening to us on 89 WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
I want to say that if 24 years of tax returns, as far as release to John McCain, was good enough for John McCain, then you know what? The American people have a right to see those tax returns. And the reason why he doesn't release them is because they're worse being released than the hits he's taken as far as being non-released. And, Bruce, you said it. I've listened to the show since the beginning. You said it 4 years ago. This is out of your mouth, not mine. Mitt Romney is the most disingenuous candidate that you had ever seen. That's why the guy runs into problems, because he is disingenuous.
Bill, you have a very good memory, and I'm not backing away from that statement. I'll be back shortly. Bruce DeWitt back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's head to Buckeye Land. Let's go to Youngstown, Ohio, where Jeff is listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of took offense to you guys not respecting the respect that Condoleezza Rice had gotten as Secretary of State, et cetera, et cetera. The people respected her. She's brilliant. I have a brilliant mind. Just because she couldn't have her way in everything, as far as being, she worked for the Bush administration. She was not the head of the Bush administration. You have to look beyond certain things. Condi Rice would be an excellent person for Mitt Romney. Marco Rubio better, because blacks are not the best minority anymore. They're the lowest minority, major minority in America. Don't discount her. That is
incorrect. Well, I'm just offering my own assessment. I think that first of all, everybody knows that a decision on who you're going to vote for is based on the top of the ticket, and I
Absolutely.
Just think that if you're African American, you're going to vote for Barack Obama. I don't think you're going to be voting for Condoleezza Rice. There may be some, but not a lot.
Well, yeah,
Condoleezza Rice, to me, as a political commodity, may be more influential because she's a woman than because she's a black woman. And again, no, you know, we can disagree. You know, she's held a lot of very important jobs. She's very bright. She's a very good spokesman. I'm just saying that in probably the defining moment of her public career, she did not, in my view, she did not stand up very well under scrutiny when she seemed to be sort of incredulous about the attack on the United States.
And it's very clear that the Romney campaign does not want to relitigate the Bush presidency.
No.
They had a fundraiser with Dick Cheney, and they kept reporters miles away from that. Bush endorsed Romney. They don't want anything to do with that administration.
I agree with the caller relative to Condi Rice's professional and academic and public attainments.
And she's a great pianist.
She's an extraordinary person. But I think politically, right, we're talking about her in a political sense.
And
I think there's a reason why this is not really going to happen. And I think we're going to see the campaign go in a different.
I think it came out at the time it came out because of this whole thing with Bain Campbell. This is just a distraction. No one really wants Condi.
Okay, if they don't want Condoleezza Rice, is Rob Portman the obvious person? But Tim Valenti seems to be.
I think the name seems popping up over and over again. The ones who know aren't talking, but as one who does not know, here's my chatter.
And talk.
I think there's a bunch. I do. I believe that there is a bunch, and I believe that it's maybe six or eight names, and Plenty and Portman, and I think that you're probably looking at. One of the governors on the East Coast
comes to mind.
No, I think
Kelly
that,
Ayotte.
I don't know about Ayotte, but there's a governor out in New Mexico.
Martinez.
Yeah, Martinez. And I think that there's
about Brewer.
Can they be president? It won't be Jan Brewer.
This is another reason about Condi. After the 2008 experience, yeah. Sarah Palin, I think Mitt Romney is going to nominate. He's going to propose somebody who is clearly, facially qualified to be president. There is not going to be any daylight between
the nominee and the office. Let's take a moment because that's a very serious thing. And
it is a serious thing.
It sends a real strong signal as to who the person. It's the first major decision the would-be president has to make. Would Rob Portman be the obvious, easiest, most cautious, and yet most qualified person to pick?
I think he would be the obvious pick. I mean, this will keep on that whole model with the campaign, Romney's campaign, of being risk adverse, controversy adverse. I mean, this Portman is the perfect guy for this.
He's a biography candidate.
Yes.
He makes the least news, it seems to me, of all these names we've brought up.
Which is not the goal.
I think, to go back to what Chris was saying earlier in the hour, which is that the Romney campaign wants to focus this on the economy. They don't want us to waste 2 or 3 weeks talking about the biography of the vice presidential.
Here's the point. Now, here's the question about how do you, as you say, the guys in Boston, the brains in Boston.
Right.
It's been a while since they won a presidential campaign.
Right.
Okay. So they don't know how to play dirty. Do you need, as once upon a time you did, a pit bull as your vice president? And is Portman too polite?
Are you talking about
Chris? Way too polite.
Chris Christie.
Chris
Christie would. The other issues would pop up with Chris Christie, but Marco Rubio, you don't want to be on the receiving end of a Marco Rubio attack. And if Marco Rubio is the nominee, and I personally have been sort of crossing my fingers for Marco Rubio, I think he would be very solid.
His star started sliding
at the point where the immigration law came into effect and when the Supreme Court came down with their decision. The fact of the matter is, Rubio had pending legislation that mirrored the Obama legislation as related to illegal immigration.
And that's why Obama announced it.
He upstaged him. Well, that happens. Another name. Is Bobby Jindal presidential?
No.
Because?
No, I mean, he's never recovered from that post-State of the Union speech. He gave look like Mr. Rogers. I mean, he doesn't sound presidential. He doesn't look presidential. He doesn't, you know,
I think he's another strong member of the bench. I don't really see him stepping into that role, but...
He's a tertiary candidate.
I think he's you should go long on Jindal long-term.
If you were to bet right now, again, because the music is a play and we're about to end this first segment... betting right now, the running mate will be, according to you.
I'm going Portman. Just
Portman.
Safe choice.
It's a safe choice.
Rubio,
you're going with your heart.
Yep.
I'll stick with Portman. On that note, we are going to say farewell to our guests in hour number one. They will all be back for hour number two. If you're watching this program on television, we're going to see you next week. If you're listening to it on radio, from coast to coast and border to border, the phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Doom on another full hour coming up after Network News. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Chris Roebling, liberal Eric Zorn, and Anthony Anderson of the Republican Precinct Project. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8029. That's toll free, 1-800-723-8029. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. We've been talking about Mitt Romney and the campaign and Bain Capital in hour number one, NAACP, the images of the campaigns and how the campaigns are being waged. I want to switch gears and talk about a few other things in this hour. I just want to get everybody's response because it's been a big story for quite some time, and that is the report that came out last week by Louis Free, the former head of the FBI who looked into the handling of Penn State and Jerry Sandusky and the way the stewards of the University of Pennsylvania handled the charges against Jerry Sandusky, and also brought up, obviously, what Joe Paterno knew and when he knew it. Eric Zorn, what's your assessment, and what lessons are there to be learned from what happened at Penn State and what happened in the Jerry Sandusky case?
A lot of question there. I mean, it was, you know, it's a horrifyingly damning report from Free as to the, you know, the levels of culpability in this scandal. I mean, it was much worse than we had thought. I mean, I think the first response that a lot of people had was, oh, Joe Paterno and those guys, they you know, they didn't quite get it. They were told something was going on, and they didn't really understand or take it seriously, and they kind of blew it off. I think what Free is showing is that they knew that this was bad. They knew that they had to that the reputation of the university might be on the line, and they and their children who were victimized because of it. So, you know, in terms of, you know, my reaction to it, I was surprised that it was that bad, and you know, I think things obviously need to be done. So,
Anthony Anderson, your response?
Yeah, it was a terrible report here by the former FBI director. In my estimation, I always knew that there was way too much going on with this coach Sandusky. I mean, for things to be happening the way they did over the time period that it happened, I think that there's a lot of people around that organization, Penn State, that knew that. I mean, they chose to put Penn State over the health and welfare of kids at their facilities. It was a terrible thing that happened. Hopefully, the organization Penn State will be sanctioned as such, so something like this doesn't happen in the future.
Chris Roebling,
Chicago Angle. Robert Maynard Hutchins was right. The entire complex of college sports is a hypocritical fraud. It exploits these young athletes. It doesn't give them what it says it's going to give them. They get something else, and then they get into trouble. The NCAA ought to be shut down, and every sport that's currently sponging off of major academic institutions ought to be set off to find their own farm system, like Canadian football. All good Chicago or good U.S. American football players ought to go to the Canadian League.
Don't you think that's sort
this
of
is an outrage?
But don't you it's think an, it's sort of an overreaction?
No. And anyway, football ought to be shut down because of brain injuries.
Program?
No. Brain injuries, football, forget it. We ought to be out of football in 5 years. No, it's
absolutely,
an absolute,
not.
It's
I
an absolute
to
disaster.
I mean, you don't take the case of one incident such as the Penn State incident
and throw
a blanket
don't look
in,
at Dave
in terms
Duerson.
Of, in terms of, yeah, I mean, you're taking
look,
these
what
these
are you
individual
saying to the,
actions. You're taking these individual events and you're going to roll them into one big ball here and say, okay, we're going to damn the whole sport because of the actions of a few individuals.
Well, no. Let's take it.
I'm talking about in terms of Sandusky and disbanding the whole NCAA.
Saying, look,
there are a lot of good things that come out of the NCAA. The sports.
And sports. Organized sports.
Organized sports. I mean, but to say that, you know,
it's
we're going to shut
fraud.
The whole thing down.
It's all a fraud.
A fraud
these
in
guys
what
are
sense?
One at a time.
Penn State has a revenue stream that comes directly from the labor of these so-called student athletes, many of whom can't find jobs. This is why John Thompson, I had the privilege of going to Georgetown. John Thompson's symbol was not a Georgetown Bulldog, was not a big H for Hoya. It was a deflated basketball.
Okay.
And every person, every parent who met with John Thompson saw that deflated basketball. And he said, this is your career in 7 years. You got to understand that you're at Georgetown, you get a degree, so somebody will hire you. And these kids are taken advantage of. And in terms of Sandusky just specifically, it's an outrage. It's a betrayal. And there, I'm not sorry for what's going to happen to Sandusky in the House. And I am not sorry for what's going to happen to anybody at Penn State.
So rather than damn the whole sport, what I would suggest is, hey, listen, maybe we can compensate these individuals in some terms of monetary policy or something else to get these guys on the right road after they've left this profession.
Let's go to Jerry in Cookeville, Tennessee, listening to us on WATX. Wants to talk about Bain Capital from hour number one. Jerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. I'll be kind of like Yogi Berra. Before I get to my point, let me say this before I say anything.
Okay.
The deal with Romney not having good communication speakers out there, well, maybe he should have somebody like Anita Dunn. I'm sure we all remember her, the one who turned to the communist mass murderer Mao Zedong for political inspiration. Maybe if he had people like that working for him, he'd be able to maybe do a little better. But
the problem is Obama has Anita Dunn. He allows people like that into the government of the United States or into the Democratic Party, wherever she was working. And he's still at 47%, Jerry. The problem is the country is being transformed in a grotesque way by people who think that government is somehow redeemable.
But what we have here, because you mentioned 47%, I think the current poll is 46% with each party.
That's within the margin.
These are national polls, not individual battleground state polls. In some of the battleground state polls, the president is doing better today than he did 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago. So the question is, we're at a point now where who's going to close the deal? No one is closing the deal here.
Yeah, I would ask the question. I would put it the other way from what Chris said, which is, yeah, we're still at 46%. You've got this candidate, this Republican candidate, who was trashed by most of the people in his party throughout the entire brutal primary campaign. Who's you know, charmless guy who's given to saying things like, you know, I like to fire people and corporations are people, my friend. And I mean, this guy is putting his foot in his mouth all the time. He's running this terrible campaign. And yet we're at 46% against a candidate who's, you know, Barack Obama.
Who a lot of people dislike.
But he's a good campaigner. He's a likable fellow.
Well, and a lot of people still like. Let me tell you something. The doctrine,
likable.
The doctrine of the Romney campaign is stay far away, stay 500 miles away from any personal attack on Barack Obama. Because the Romney campaign polling, Neil Newhouse, the polling of the Romney campaign shows that Barack Obama's personal popularity remains high. I think he's a very appealing guy. I don't think any.
I think you have got to have, as a running mate, I think you have to have a pit bull.
You absolutely have to.
Because you cannot. Romney can't get mad. He can't, you know.
It's not even in Romney to get mad.
No, it's not. You're right.
Can this guy get mad? Are you serious?
He is too polite. He's
way
terminally
too polite.
And you cannot make it to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue by being political. You need somebody in your team who can go after and go out there and tear somebody up. Anyway, 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. We're going to get back to discussions in just a moment after I mentioned a couple of things. That one is a little correction from last week. We were talking about an event that's coming up at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We were going to do this on the 18th. It has been moved to the 23rd. That is a Monday, a week from tomorrow. It is the 50th anniversary of the Telstar broadcast. And this was the first transatlantic television broadcast. Part of the program was programming in the United States sent to Europe. Another part of the program was European program sent to the United States. And on that day, the 50th anniversary, we'll be talking with Newton Minow, who was the chairman of the FCC Commission at that time. He was the Federal Communications Commission. He was the one who advised President Kennedy on the importance of investing some dollars into making this. It was obviously a program that was also primarily fronted by AT&T. But again, it was the moment when the world became a lot smaller, and NBC has all of the specials, all of the television specials that were produced that day 50 years ago. And that day at the museum, we're going to be playing all of those programs 50 years later, exactly 50 years later, and you're all invited to come to participate in that. And if you grew up in the early 50s, you may remember the name Mary Hartline. She was television's first blonde bombshell sex symbol. She will be back on Saturday, July 28th. She'll be coming home to Chicago, former star of Super Circus. And that's at noon on Saturday the 28th. If you'd like more information for either of those, you can go to the museum website at museum.tv. We're going to go back to calls in just a moment, but I want to talk about another issue. For those listening around the country, everybody certainly knows the name Jesse Jackson. Some of you may also know the name Jesse Jackson Jr. He is Reverend Jackson's son, and he is a long-term congressman from the Chicagoland area. He recently won the Democratic nomination to run again, and yet in the last, I'd say, several weeks, there's been a lot of questions as to where he is. He's been sort of AWOL, and it's raised the questions of what's really going on and what's really wrong with Jesse Jackson Jr. And my first question to you, Eric, because again, this is a story obviously that has received a great deal of play here in the Chicagoland area. The way in which the media has handled the missing Jesse Jackson Jr. story, do you think the media has treated Reverend or Jesse Jackson Jr. fairly in some of the speculation that's been out there about his whereabouts and some of his medical ills as well?
For the most part, yes. I think they have. There have been some irresponsible stuff that's been floated, maybe in a way that wasn't clearly labeled as rumor. But for the most part, yeah, it became a legitimate question when his staff announced. It was June 10th that he decided to take a leave. Nobody noticed for 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks later, his staff came out and said, well, he's suffering from exhaustion. And we all kind of kicked that around a little bit. It sounds like a celebrity malady of some sort, usually having to do with drug rehab or whatever. And then a couple of weeks after that, they said, oh, well, no, it's a much more serious emotional and physical ailment that's going to require some inpatient treatment. And that, of course, raised even more questions about this. And then just last week they came out and said that it's a mood disorder, right, which is generally – there are a number of mood disorders. The most common mood disorder was clinical depression. So each time they've let a little bit more news dribble out, it's fueled a new round of speculation, a new round of conversation about – you know, what the obligations are for a public figure to disclose his medical history. And I think a conversation has been fairly responsible.
Anthony, I want to ask again, for those people who did not hear the beginning of the broadcast and who are listening to this broadcast on radio, You're African American, and you are a very outspoken Republican. But I want to get your reaction. Again, I want you to look at this analytically.
Okay.
How does Jesse Jackson Jr., how does he currently, how does he play in the black communities of Chicago?
I think he plays to the black community. I mean, they look at him as an expert in the black community in terms of policy. He puts their issues to the front table. He's fighting for his constituency. So yeah, they look at this event, this recent event, as an attack. I mean, but Jesse Jackson, he didn't do himself any favors with what he's done in the past few weeks. I mean, had he come out like Mark Kirk did? Mark Kirk had a physician come out, make a statement, and he kept it moving. That's how it went.
This is our senator who had a stroke.
Yeah,
right?
Senator Mark Kirk. He came in. He had a stroke. His physicians came out. They gave us a story, and that was it. I truly think that there are some physical ailments with Jesse Jackson Jr. Had he been more forthcoming in the beginning, we wouldn't be at the situation we're at now. If one takes a look and look back at what's happened, Jesse Jackson has had a stellar record, whether you agree with him or not, in terms of his voting history in Congress. It's just the past 2 weeks he's really outside of June that he's really missed some votes. Now, if you take that and you juxtapose that to what Mark Kirk has done, Mark Kirk has missed almost 6 months of voting in the United States Senate. So once again, Jesse Jackson should have been more forthcoming, and none of this mess would be at the point where it's at now.
Some people are calling for him to step down and step aside, and the Democrats appoint someone to replace him. Chris Roebling, again, if people just tuned in, you are a Republican, but you've been following the story. You've been an advisor in political campaigns. I'm sure you've had to hush a few things up in your career.
Never.
How is this?
That has never happened. Eric's always on the phone saying, what the heck's going on?
How has this story been played, and has it been played fairly for Jesse Jackson Jr.?
Well, I think that I agree with Eric. I think it's been pretty fair, but I also agree with Anthony. I think that the Jackson thing, and it's a big thing. You know, you've got the office here in Chicago, you've got the campaign, then you've got the family, and the family has access to the media. Mm-hmm. And a lot of questions. I saw one of his sisters, very eloquent young lady, was on Fox News about some totally, you know, monetary policy or something. And the host says
she's a commentator.
She is indeed. Commentator. And the host says, oh, and by the way, let's start by talking about your brother. And then you get 3 minutes. So the family has access. Mrs. Jackson, his mother, spoke recently, and that was added. So you've got a lot of different messages coming out, but not the original.
Hold on one second.
Okay. Not the original sort of medical statement. Mm-hmm. The office holder has an issue, is receiving treatment. That's going to proceed, and we will get back to you. I think when people say that,
what about the father?
People get along.
Yeah, the father, and I was just about to say the wife also. I mean, it's added to the fodder when
we should. By the way, again, for those people listening around the country, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. Obviously, his father is world renowned. His wife is an alderman in the city of Chicago. She is elected. So
absolutely,
they are a power couple.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Anthony.
When she was asked certain questions as it relates to his health or his conditions, she was sort of out there like, hey, listen, I don't know any more than you guys know.
That did not help.
That didn't help. She came across as not knowing the condition of her husband.
Yeah.
Now,
it was,
what
it
do you
may
say
have
at
just
this
been
point?
She's a brilliant young lady, and let me tell you, but her statement, unfortunately,
it was a misstatement.
I think clouded the issue.
Absolutely.
It didn't clarify. The clouds came in. They did not go away.
Is there a how strong is the move to replace him by the Democrats?
Well, I was listening to some reports
earlier. There's also concern about an ethical cloud that hangs over his head with a trial that is upcoming, and also a cloud that hangs over his head because of his alleged involvement with Rod Blagojevich and an attempt to buy the U.S. Senate seat.
As a matter of fact, when Tony Resco was arrested, when he was indicted by the
Tell people who Tony Resco is around the country. We've got to assume there's a lot of people listening that may not know all these names that we
Tony
Chicago
Resco was one of Barack Obama's confidants. He was also an individual who had some dealings with Jesse Jackson Jr. In terms of day-to-day operations. Tony Resco allegedly, well, the federal government is alleging that he had approached Obama or not, Jesse Jackson Jr. had approached Obama in some form or fashion to buy the United States Senate seat in the state of Illinois. That never came to fruition at this point, we know. But, however, he was indicted and arrested, and the federal government has him.
Blagojevich, not Obama.
Yes, it was Blagojevich.
Blagojevich, yes.
And it was, and it was an indirect approach.
It was
indirect.
Eric Zorn.
Well, I just want you just make sure that we're not stealing too many bases and summarizing this problem that he has. But it's an ethical issue that has to do with him allegedly being involved with sending an emissary to Blagojevich to talk about campaign contributions that would result in him being appointed to the Senate seat. But there's some other ethical obligations here. But it seems to me that when you look at Jesse Jackson Jr., we did an editorial the other day talking about how, you know, you look back 10 years ago and Jesse Jackson Jr. was sort of like the prince of the city. He was this guy. People were talking about him as the next senator, the next mayor of Chicago, and even possibly the next the first African-American president. I mean, he's a very smart guy.
We've all
talked to him. Very smart guy. Well-spoken. He is a very decent
young man. Very circumspect. I found it oddly, always spoke of his father as Reverend Jackson. He never talked about his father or his dad.
Much more controlled than his
father. But in personal conversations over the years that I've had with him, I mean, clearly, like any son, doesn't always agree with his father and understands that there is this tremendous pressure that when your father is one of the most well-known African-Americans in the world, it puts additional pressures on you. And so he is trying to build his own career, and obviously he's a multiple-term congressman, so he's beginning to do that. And yet there's sickness with
Jesse Jackson Jr., and plus I believe there's a tinge of Feditis.
Well, if I may, Eric, I think, was getting very close to the point. He was eclipsed.
At that point, you're going to have to wait because we have to pause. 1-800-723-8209. We'll be back with Chris's pithy comments and your calls at 1-800-723-8209. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this Sunday night. Chris Roebling is here. He's our card-carrying conservative Republican. He is with Jane C. Thompson and Associates. That's a public affairs group, and they've been together for 10 years now. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Eric Zorn also is with us. He is a longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune and also one of the leaders of the blogosphere with his blogs. And let me just ask you a question. How many years have you been writing that column?
The column? Since 1986. So
wow.
It's been a long time.
What happens when you wake up and you don't have an idea?
That's about three times a week.
How do you find them?
Well,
I mean, the deadlines, and you don't just phone them in. I mean, they're very well-written columns. So.
It's all about always keeping your – I mean, a column – I got last time I was on this show, Chris Roebling and I were talking off the air, and I got a column idea out of him. I'm always looking. So people email me with stuff, and I'm always reading and listening to the radio and – And then at the end of the day, it's letters to Eric. That's the
truth. And Anthony Anderson also joins us. He is with the Juvenile Justice Department here in the city, in the state of Illinois, and also is with the Republican Precinct Project.
Absolutely.
And trying to put a Republican precinct committeeman in every precinct in the state of Illinois.
Absolutely, yes.
That is your goal for honest elections. Let us go to – let's take a couple of calls. No, you know, we're gonna go to Chris. You were going to make a pithy comment about Jesse Jackson Jr.
Huge potential.
Jr.
was – Jesse Jackson Jr. Huge potential was then somewhat – was then largely eclipsed by Barack Obama.
Yes.
And then ended up with some level of involvement. I'm not saying how much, and that's going to be determined by investigators, but some level of involvement in this – untoward situation related to rescue, and now this, and I think we might be watching the implosion of someone who had tremendous potential to be a next generation leader, a major player. It's a very sad situation.
Jack, listening to us in Chicago on 89 WLS, the radio home of Dan Proft. Go ahead.
Hey guys, I just want to make two quick points. On Bain, I think Romney and the advisors opened the door way too much on Bain. I think that That's an issue that should have never gone as far as it did, being president or CEO of a venture capital firm. Comparing that to being president of the United States is like comparing the planet Pluto to the state of Georgia. While he's got some very good qualifications as a CEO, running a corporation or running the United States of America are a night and day difference. And I think Bain's been way overplayed. I think Romney's campaign needs to focus as much as possible. And the second point is, and that focus needs to be just not pounding on Fast and Furious on Eric Holder. While we politicize that, what we're actually doing there is we're forgetting how to solve the problem with ATF, who's always caused this problem between Gunrunner and Fast and Furious. And the problem is nobody's fixing the problem. Everybody's just blaming each other.
Well, I think one of the reasons why they're not talking about the issue anymore is that those who are familiar with Fast and Furious, whether you're supporters of Obama or supporters of Romney or in between, you've basically you're in the 94% that have already made up their mind.
Well,
going to change any votes.
What's missing here is a free press. I mean, if this were happening under a Republican president, the level of attention to this scandal would have been wholly different from the very first moment. And the National Press Corps has, not through a secret meeting at a floating crap game in New York with Nathan Detroit, but the National Press Corps decided on an individual basis to ignore this. And so a vast scandal about what really happened has been obscured because Holder defies Congress, lies to Congress, and because the media doesn't care. And the same thing is happening. Hold on 1 second, caller. The other thing that's going on is the national media, which went upside down, backwards, triple flip, like Nadia Comaneci over the Valerie Plame situation, completely ignores the leakage, the obvious intended leakage of the highest levels of the White House about what a tough guy Barack Obama is relative to the war on terror. So the National Press Corps remains, in my opinion, the first organ of support for Barack Obama.
Jack, your response to that, and then I want to get Eric's response.
Well, here's my response to that. While he's absolutely correct on that one point, the point is that the House government reform is also dropping the ball. That's the Republican side. And rather than fix the issue with ATF and some of these mistakes,
hold on.
Are just continually bombarding on the
No, Jack, I'm not going to let you go with that equivalence argument because it doesn't exist, because they can't solve anything until they have the information from Justice that Justice has produced internally under the subpoena. So what we have here is the subpoena arrives. It's legally perfected. Justice produces, name in 80,000 or 90,000 documents. They send 7 to Congress. They keep all 90,000. They can't. Congress, the Republicans, I don't care who you're talking, Senate, Democrat, House, Republican, I don't care. Congress cannot fix it if they don't have the information. Holder is withholding the information. He ought to be kicked right the heck out of office.
Eric Zorn.
First, I had to compliment Chris on his Nadia Comaneci
illusion.
It's going back a long ways. But,
Olympics are in the air.
They certainly are. But no, I mean, Fast and Furious is not an issue that's particularly intrigued me that much. I mean, I feel like this is basically about executive privilege is what Holder's stance is and the White House's stance here. And, Obama's invoked executive privilege. Presidents invoke executive privilege. People get all wrapped around the axle about executive privilege. I did want to talk about
What about the basics of the story, though? They don't interest you because
the basics.
Well, I mean,
in terms of the federal government being involved in running guns from this.
Running guns. I mean, this was obviously a botched attempt, right? That started under the Bush administration.
Absolutely wrong.
To trace firearms.
Absolutely wrong.
I think you're wrong there, Chris. I think this whole Fast and Furious can be traced back to the Bush administration, but under a different name. So go ahead.
That activity was stopped by the Bush administration because it determined that it was a failure. And the Bush administration took a layered approach to safeguarding the location of those guns through chips and things like this. They went high tech on the guns so that they could physically watch them from national technical means. And they were watching them as they went. And within about, 6 weeks or whatever, they realized, we cannot control this stuff. We've got to shut this thing down. It was closed, ended, finished under Bush and discredited. It was started again under Obama, under Holder, under the BATF, under the et cetera.
I don't know about started, but
it was restarted.
Revived by Bush, it was by Obama.
No,
that would be
hold on.
Revived.
Because,
it was revived.
No, it was not because they did not
use
the—
You're being disingenuous when you say that the Obama administration just took it from zero, we're back down to zero, and then we're going to start up this program.
Let me tell you.
It didn't work in the past.
Let me tell you, they did
it,
not have—
It was
have,
a program that was revived.
Excuse me. They did not have radio frequency identification for the guns. They did not have control over all of the numbering of the guns. They did not take the steps that were taken. This is all on the record, and this is just in the 7,000 pages that we have. Imagine what's in the 83,000 or the 73,000, you pick the number, pages
but your
that
point,
Eric
the,
Holder won't give.
So but the point is that what Eric has said that as a journalist, this story has not interested him.
Fair enough.
And you make the point that it has not interested many other influential journalists because
of their politics. I make the further point that this is, no offense to Eric, and I disagree about the executive privilege because that didn't come up until the 11th hour. It was not an executive privilege matter 18 months ago when Eric Holder was writing letters to Congress that were lies, that he knew were lies, that he then retracted. Now, that's if that had been done by John Ashcroft— If that had been done by Ed Meese or John Ashcroft, I know where the New York Times would have been. We saw it. We saw those things. Now, in this case, leaving that issue aside about the executive privilege, it's a double standard case, not necessarily in Eric's case.
Let's let Eric respond.
Well, I wish I had done my homework on the Fast and Furious case. It's just it has struck me as one of these partisan bickering matches when you have everybody in the House votes to bring charges against Holder, and all the Democrats don't want to do it.
In fairness, the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, had to be forced to bring this issue up because at first he did not want to bring the issue of Fast and Furious to the Congress.
Anyway, the caller made the other point, though, about Bain, where he's saying that he thinks that this is not an issue that should be brought up. And actually, this is Mitt Romney's credential to run for office, is that he was a successful businessman. That's pretty much it. He wasn't that great as a governor of Massachusetts. He was a one-term governor, and halfway through he checked out so he could start running for president. And so he doesn't have a lot to run on in Massachusetts. His credential is, I'm a really smart guy. I made all this money, so that the activities of Bain are central. They've been central to his political career since 1994.
What qualification did Barack Obama have? What qualification did Bill Clinton have? Clinton was running the state of Arizona, the state of Arkansas. The state of Arkansas, in our intellectual map up here,
right,
was about the size in terms of budget and payroll of the Cook County Sheriff's Organization.
Well, this is the card he plays.
So this is the card he plays. He's a failed governor of a failed nowhere state called Arkansas. Barack Obama is carrying buckets of water for Emil Jones, voting absent or present or whatever the hell he's voting. What qualification did Barack Obama have except pretty face, nice speech?
Well, that can take you a long way.
Well, I just want to say,
presidency.
The thing about Romney.
And McCain took that card off the table when he put Sarah Palin on his ticket.
The thing about Romney
Did. You know, the thing about Romney, you're going to have to pause one more time. We're going to stand by. We do have callers on the line. We're going to hear from them as well. 1-800-723-8029. We've got people from Boston calling us, and they are going to respond. And we're just waiting. We're waiting for the people for Arkansas.
I want Eric Bernstrom to call.
Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Chris Roebling, finish your sentence.
I just think Romney deserves credit for governing a state like Massachusetts where he is a minority Republican in a Democrat-dominated General Assembly.
Let's go to Mark, who is calling from Boston, listening to us tonight on POTUS on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Mark. Nice to hear from Boston tonight.
Hi, good evening. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine. Are you a big Red Sox fan?
I am a Red Sox fan.
Well, terrific. On behalf of every White Sox fan, I want to thank you for sending us Kevin Youkilis.
Yeah, Youkilis is
really
great,
appreciate
man.
It.
Thank you very much.
He's only won about seven games for us.
And we love Fenway, and we recognize it's 2 weeks older than Wrigley.
Go ahead.
There you go. Just real quick, I'm an independent, and sometimes I don't agree with Republicans or Democrats. But there's one thing about Romney, and my question is, why won't he release more of his taxes? Because in my opinion, don't even buy what his dad said. You release less than 12 years, you have something to hide. Yeah. Now, if he had released more of his taxes, he could put this whole Bain argument to rest.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He can just say, you know what, right. You guys are making it's much ado about nothing. Right. Here are my taxes. And end it.
Okay,
but he's
Mark,
coming across as like he's hiding something, and that makes me not trust him.
Okay, Mark, I'm going to tell you something. You and I should meet tomorrow morning at Harvard Square. And we'll walk over to the registrar's office. We'll pick up Barack's transcript from Harvard Law School. And if you and I can work that one out, then we'll go over to Romney headquarters and get his tax returns. How does it, Barack Obama lied to the American people throughout the campaign in 2008 about his relationship with Acorn week in and week out, day in and day out. He was a child of Acorn. Acorn was a central activity. Acorn was backing his campaign to the hilt. Okay, he did not release a word.
What did he do? I don't even remember.
You got to read Howard Stanley Kurtz's book.
Now
I want to tell you something. You go ahead and read that. And I want to tell you, Mark.
Acorn.
Nobody cares about Mitt Romney. Here's Mitt Romney's tax return. He has $250 million. He's got an income of 25. He's paying about $7 million in taxes.
Nobody cares about Mitt Romney. We'll see about that.
But I don't mean to interrupt you guys, but I don't care how rich this guy is. That's not my issue. He can make as much money as he possibly can. My thing is, listen, you know, if you did something, if you outsourced jobs, that was his job. You know, if his job was to make money for investors, that's what he was supposed to do. Own up to it. That's nothing to hide from. You know, so don't be scared about saying, this is what I did, and I did it well.
Yeah.
Now I'm running for president, and this is what I tend to do.
Mark,
but when he doesn't do that, it just makes me feel like he's running.
I want to ask you another question, completely different subject, but again, I want to let you begin this discussion, and then we'll let the guys around the table in Chicago sort of follow up on it as well. One of the things that we're allegedly hearing, we are hearing it, there is an alleged conversation going on within the Romney campaign as to whether or not he will break tradition and he will name his running mate in advance of the convention coming up in Florida. Number one, do you think that's a good idea?
I don't. I think he should stick with the tradition and go with the game plan. I think he should just revamp his campaign, but don't break tradition as far as that goes.
But McCain announced Palin in Ohio before they ever got to Minnesota. You remember they had that big event in
it was like a week,
right,
wasn't
it? The week before.
She wasn't vetted well.
It was on the Friday before.
The question is it going to be in like an early August when we have basically a month to get our minds around it? Because the conventions are right around Labor Day. They're bookend Labor Day, don't they?
Yeah.
Or Labor Day, whatever. I mean, the thing is that, you know, as I said earlier in the show, John McCain wanted to see his tax returns going back to 1983. It's been traditional for presidential candidates to release multiple years, five, six. And John Kerry used to release his all the time. To release these documents, and I think what he's probably hiding is a couple of things. One is that he's been paying the capital gains rate on his income, so he's going to be able to
15%.
Yeah, 15%. He hasn't been paying you know what the percentage of other high income earners pay in America, and he's probably going to show a lot of offshore investments. And I know you think Swiss bank accounts and Cayman Islands and the Barbados and all those things don't matter to the American people. They do.
Maybe they're going to release it at a time when,
wait a minute,
when they
wait
think
a minute.
The story's
going to be. Here's what matters. We are over 8% with unemployment, and Barack Obama has been standing at the plate for 3.5 years, and he's been whiffing.
And
this is what matters, Eric. Nobody cares. Everybody, I got news. Everybody knows Mitt's got $250 million. He makes $25 million a year. He pays $7 or $8 million. Whatever it is.
Question
is,
we have just a few minutes left, and I don't want to let this go undealt with tonight. Mitt Romney, before the convention, he has a trip planned to the Olympics in London.
Yes.
He's going to Israel, and he's going to Poland. How is that going to help him, if indeed you think it will help him? Again, he's reminding people
that he was involved in the Olympics. He inadvertently is sort of trapped by this controversy that he didn't know when he announced that he was going to go, and that's the making of the uniforms. But is it really important that the average person, the people that are going to decide this election, are they going to vote for him? Oh, yeah, he's the guy that saved the Olympics.
Well, I think people are going to vote for, people voted in 2008 for Barack Obama in part because of his entry into the world stage and the very successful visit he had to Europe and to Berlin. And I think that Mitt Romney is appropriately acknowledging the significance of foreign affairs and foreign policy with this trip, because Israel has been a disaster for the Obama so-called foreign policy, and Poland, you know, Barack Obama turned his back on Poland and really consigned Poland to political oblivion in terms of the Soviet Union, in terms of Russia.
He has a dancing horse in the Olympics. I think remind him of his aristocratic qualities.
Absolutely.
You know, you're talking about just real quickly what people are concerned about. The question is Mitt Romney the guy to lead this country for the next 4 years? Is he the guy who identifies with the problems of the middle class, who knows how to solve these problems?
Absolutely.
Knows how
Mitt Romney doesn't identify with the middle class. He seems more aloof than any other candidate that I've ever seen.
Does
in
he
that
care about role. People like me? Does he identify with
no,
people
he
like
does
me?
Not.
And
he
so
does
that's
not.
That's the issue.
Mitt Romney.
Are you voting for him?
You're a Republican. I would rather vote Mitt Romney. I would not vote for a Barack Obama. But as it relates to Eric's question is this, Mitt Romney seems totally aloof to the average person. Mitt Romney can relate to one who has a means to getting from A to B. That is true. That's a fact.
On that note, we are on that ringing endorsement of Mitt Romney by one of our Republican guests. That was Anthony Anderson. Chris Roebling has also been with us. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. This program is a Genby production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Tom Veracruz for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.